I like that. Labor and Commerce now come to order. It's roughly 3 o'clock on February 25th. With this are Berta Gardner, Representative Berta Gardner, Representative Bob Book, Representative Mark Newman, and myself, Chair Olson. First bill up is, House Bill 413, Extended Real Estate Commission, presented by Eleanor Wolf. Committee chair of committee aide for labor and commerce. Oh, and it looks like we have a little help today too.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Eleanor Wolf. I'm staff to the Labor and Commerce Committee and Chair Olson. We introduced this bill at the request of Legislative Budget Audit and the department to extend the Real Estate Commission per the auditor's recommendation to, I believe, 2016. And I have Ms. Davidson here to present you with the audit.
I believe this is the shortest bill that we've had this session, isn't it?
Should be short and sweet, Mr. Chair.
Good afternoon. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
For the record, Pat Davidson, representing the Division of Legislative Audit. And our the recommendation identified in the audit is to extend the termination date of this commission until June 30, 2016. The report did contain a couple of recommendations, one that's probably more related to the Finance Committee, but just so that members are aware of it. Our audit field work ended at the end of May. During the end of the fiscal year, the reappropriation period, the department did identify additional revenues. And so while we had a recommendation to increase fees based on subsequent financial activity, that is no longer a valid recommendation. And I just wanted to bring that to the members' attention. But other than that, we found that the board is licensing and regulating real estate professionals in a manner to serve the public. And we do recommend to extend the termination date.
Is there anybody online that would care to testify on this bill? Or just question only?
Ms. Walsh, questions.
Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on this extension?
I do have a question over here. If I might.
Robert Walsh is here.
I understand that we had a board member who was a member, and there was some question about his requirements while he was on the board. Could you go over that? Page 10 of your report goes over that. In recommendation
number two,
second paragraph.
Through the chair, Representative Booth. Yes, basically what we identified during the course of the audit, the experience requirement for the member of the board was not met. It was a three-year requirement for experience. The individual had a two-year experience, had 2 years worth of experience. We did address a recommendation to the Office of the Governor. They responded back and agreed with the recommendation that all members of board should meet statutory requirements, and they appreciated we bringing it to their attention. And I believe that the passage of time has, for the most part, corrected the problem that we observed during the course of the audit.
Well, that leads me to my follow-up. During the course of the tenure of this member, was there any legislation passed that is now in jeopardy because of that? Or was there any decisions made that are now moot because of that, or were in liable for, or going to be responsible before because of that?
To the chair, Representative Book, that's the exact issue that we brought up. And basically what it does is all the formal actions taken by the board would have to be gone back through, re-reviewed to see if it was a close enough vote where that one mattered. I don't believe that we actually saw anything in particular, but that really does bring up the core essence of that problem.
Follow?
No, that was the only thing I had, and I appreciate your response.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. In your findings and recommendations, you do discuss the real estate surety fund. And I don't know if you're aware of other legislation moving through or actually being heard that would replace the surety fund with a recovery fund. Would that be in keeping with your recommendations, or do you have an opinion about that?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, I have observed that there is a bill. I haven't listened to any of the testimony, and I haven't done an in-depth review of it. We do address, during the course of the audit, we did look at the real estate surety fund from a matter of, does it duplicate activities? Our concern was, is there private insurance out there for an approximately the same value that is available to members? And as part of that review, we also looked at what was going on. We selected like 11 Western states. And during the course of our field work, we found that 7 of the 11 states had surety funds and did not require professional liability insurance. 2 states did not have surety funds nor require professional liability insurance. And then the last 2 funds did not have surety funds but did require professional liability insurance. Mm-hmm. And so for those that we could look at, we found that annual premiums on the surety bonds and or surety bonds and E&O insurance range from $500 to $5,000 for the approximate coverage of the surety fund. What we didn't see is a ready market for that type of insurance at the same cost, because what we are looking at, if you increase the cost to the licensees, that's typically going to be passed on to the consumers. And so a lot of the sunset legislation is about public interest. And so as we looked at that and we considered whether there was a duplication of activity, our conclusion was no, there wasn't. There really isn't out there right now. But again, as I said, I haven't been following the bill, and I'm not exactly sure what that bill does.
Mr. Chair?
Paula?
I'm sorry, I kind of was thinking about what you said previously, but did you give a range of costs for E&O insurance just now?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, to some of the individuals that we surveyed during the course of our audit, plus talking to insurance companies, we found that annual premiums for some of the policies ranged anywhere from $500 to $5,000 for coverage equal to or more than the coverage provided by the real estate surety fund.
Thank you. But that's not the same as E&O insurance. That's a different kind of insurance, right? Because, I mean, maybe I'm misunderstanding. I thought the surety fund is the recourse when the claim is not an error or omission, but rather a claim because of fraud or misrepresentation.
True.
So that $500 to $5,000 cost for insurance is not E&O insurance, is that?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, we were looking for 2 things. We were looking at the cost of a surety bond, and we were looking at the cost of E&O insurance as sort of a benchmark there.
The bill before us is the extension of the sunset. We have another bill that is in committee, and the reason it's still in committee is because we haven't addressed all the issues that you're bringing up at this point in time.
Thank you. This one
simply runs the sunset out to 2016. We've been joined by Representative Ledoux, and Representative Newman
has
a question.
Mr. Chair, I won't pursue this any further. I just would be interested to know if Ms. Davidson would be available to testify on our other bill when the time comes.
Oh, I'm sure that can be arranged. There will be no problem on that at all.
All right.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Davidson, on this real estate commission, is it available publicly if you went on to the state's website, went to the Real Estate Commission to find out who the members are? Or is this all public information and their qualifications?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, who's on the board, I believe, is on the website. You can also get those individuals licensed by this commission. Whether their credentials to sit on the board are on there, I don't necessarily believe that they would be, but Jenny Strickland is here from the department, and she may be able to answer that question.
That's fine, Mr. Chair. I just wonder, because it was pointed out that this had happened before and that there was a board member who didn't meet the experience requirements outlined in the state. And so I just was wondering if that, you know, I mean, is that open to the public for people who wanted to look at the boards and see what's out there, if they were interested in that, you know, maybe an outline of what it would take or experience. Mm-hmm. So if that was available, how would a person find that out? Just contact boards and commissions, I guess.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I believe there might be two ways. First, most direct, I would say contacting the Office of the Governor, boards and commissions, maybe the most straightforward. I know that these people are up for confirmation in front of committees, and there may be committee minutes that address some of these qualifications as well. Those would be the two areas that I can think of that would be sources of public information that you could get more information on it.
And one more, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
This is the Real Estate Commission. Is that the only board or commission that deals with real estate in the state of Alaska?
Through the chairman, Representative Newman, this would be the board that licenses and regulates the occupation. I don't believe there would I'm sure there's professional organizations, but it's in terms of a licensing appointed board, I do not believe so.
That would have state appointed members.
Right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Seeing no one in the public that cares to testify on this, I'll close it out to public testimony and bring it back to the committee.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Newman.
If there is no more committee discussion, I move House Bill 413, version /A, with any attached fiscal notes or individual recommendations from committee.
Seeing no opposition, we'll move out of committee and we'll take a brief at ease while Representative Hawker gets set up.
Adds transitionary language, a transitionary language clause to what was technically a rather omnibus rewriting of the state CPA licensure statutes a couple of years ago. And as those omnibus processes often precipitate in this body, once they go out and go into practice, we start finding out where our process was somewhat less than perfect. In this case, we have a simple imperfection that we can fix with this bill, and that is one of the elements of the CPA licensing bill that went through. And it was an era where we were moving the state of Alaska much closer towards the sort of what has become the national standard these days, a national prototype CPA licensure requirements. Was that previously in the state of Alaska, you could become licensed as a CPA by, as one would expect, getting an accounting degree at a proper university and then working for 2 years under specific guidelines to being qualified practice experience under the supervision of another CPA. So an accounting degree and 2 years experience, and then if you pass the CPA exam and all the rest of the good things, you could become licensed as a certified public accountant. Well, the state of Alaska, previous to our omnibus bill, also, believe it or not, allowed people who did not have an accounting degree to become CPAs. And under the previous statutory authority, if you had a non-accounting or degree in something other than accounting, you could still become a certified public accountant by meeting all the other requirements, including passing the uniform certified public accounting examination. But instead of 2 years of qualifying supervised experience, it required 3 years experience. So it's 2 years with an account, 2 years experience and an accounting degree, or better yet, or rather, an accounting degree plus 2 years experience and all the other requirements, or 3 years if you don't have an accounting degree. The bill previously eliminated the alternative for not having a CPA, or excuse me, not having an accounting degree, and what, quite frankly, never came to anyone's attention or we didn't think about it as the bill was moving through, was that there would be people out there who might not have an accounting degree that would be out of university at the time the bill took effect, and they'd anticipated that they could have their degree in, say, finance or business management or whatever, you know, an MBA without an accounting emphasis, get out of university, leave university, and enter a three-year experience process. So the Alaska Board of Accountancy identified this issue, recognized this issue, and asked us to introduce this bill that would, again, provide transitionary language that would clarify that if someone had left university before the effective date of our significant changes, which was January 1st, 2008, if they had left school before then, they could still pursue the three-year experience qualification requirement. But for, again, all those folks after January 1, 2008, we are going to adopting the, I think, more specific educational requirement that your education must be specifically an accounting degree. Cases that we start to put in practice a fairly complicated piece of legislation that we find things that need to be evolved, clarified, and in this case, again, we're simply inserting a transitionary language clause that I'm sure you can get, you will have testimony, Mr. Chair, that is supported wholly by the Alaska State Board of Accountancy.
Representative Ledoux, followed by Representative Newman.
I'm just curious about something. I can understand where somebody might be thinking about being a CPA and might have their degree in finance or MBA or something of that nature. But are there people out there who maybe have a degree in paleontology, zoology, biology, history, what have you, and then have decided to become accountants and are doing the three-year thing?
Mr. Chair, in that is an actual hypothetical, that is, it's certainly entirely possible. But I want to keep in reminding the committee that individual who would be a paleontologist would still have to pass the uniform CPA examination, which is, truly it's a multi-day, very profound examination on knowledge in the accounting world there.
That doesn't bother me. I was just sort of curious.
As I said, through the chair, Representative Ledoux, it is one of those interesting phenomena, a bit like those states that allow one to challenge the bar examination.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hawker. On page 1, line 12, it says completed a bachelorette degree or its equivalent. What is meant by an equivalent? And I'm just kind of asking this so we make sure we've got it on the record here. But are we like compounding associate's degrees, or do they exclude degrees from other countries? Or what's an equivalent?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Representative Newman, just clarifying the record, that is a baccalaureate degree, not a bachelorette degree.
Baccalaureate. That's what I said.
Just for the specific interpretation, I would be reluctant myself to specifically interpret that, but I'd request you defer the question to the Board of Accountancy. It would give you a more clear definition of or explanation of what that definition is.
I was asking that for the one of my staff to come up with these good questions, and they wrote it wrong, so that's why I read it wrong. Excuse me. One more question, though.
Follow-up or new one?
What is it, maybe Mike, probably might be the other people too, then what is the process where, like, foreign students are recognized and accepted by the board? Is there something for that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Newman, as far as someone with a foreign degree qualifying, again, I would ask that be deferred specifically to the board for follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No further questions for Representative Hawker. We Mr. Mertz, I think you might be able to answer a couple of the questions. Would you care to join us, please? Please state your name and affiliation for those of us that don't know you.
I'm Max Mertz, a CPA. I'm chair of the Alaska Board of Accountancy.
So, Representative Ledoux, do you want to follow up with?
Sure. Yeah. Are there people out there who don't have degrees relating, any business degrees or similar types of degrees, but are, again, paleontologists, zoologists, et cetera, who are CPAs here in Alaska? And it doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
I'm sort of curious.
I know of folks who have degrees, non-business degrees or non-accounting specific degrees. Most of those folks went back and got accounting education before going back to take the CPA exam. It would be onerous, not impossible, but very difficult to pass the CPA exam without a foundation in accounting. So what a lot of folks might have done that had a bachelor's or a master's and something else would have gone back to get the requisite hours that you need in accounting in order to have the foundation to study for and pass the CPA exam. So there are. That was the reason for phasing out the three-year non-core, as we refer to it, so that we would have people with, you know, accounting degrees taking the CPA exam. So.
Representative Gatto, followed by Representative Newman.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Once you've got the certification, is it forever?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, it is forever, subject to biennial renewal, which includes certain continuing education and things in order to maintain active status. You can go inactive. Once you have your license, you can maintain it on an inactive status. It doesn't require you to maintain the CPE, Certified Public Continuing Education, but it is. Once you pass the exam, you never have to take it again.
If I can follow up. But if you've been inactive for a decade or longer, and you just apply, like taking a medical exam and say, hey, are you feeling okay? Yes, go ahead and go start practicing again. What about all the IRS code changes?
Right. Yeah, that's very good. Actually, in regulation, you're required, if you've gone inactive, to complete 120 hours of CPE within, I can't remember the exact time frame, but within a very brief time frame of going back onto active status, and plus you have to pay back dues for a period of time. So 120 hours of continuing ed and the application completed.
And finally, but no written test.
No written test, that's right.
Thank you.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll ask this again. On page 1, line 12, if you complete a certain degree or its equivalent, what is the equivalent?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Newman, its equivalent is, I think largely you're talking about foreign candidates, people who have completed degrees in another jurisdiction. Many countries don't have baccalaureate degrees as we define them here. There are various services that exist. I think there's two or three primary services that the state of Alaska uses that establish equivalency to United States standards. They go through a test. They're familiar with the foreign standards, and they actually issue a certificate, if you will, to the department that says, yes, this is an equivalent degree. And that's accepted by the state.
And
the bottom line is they still have to pass a test.
They have to pass the U.S. CPA exam. That's correct.
So I'm just going to make sure we had that on the record.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There's nobody signed up online. Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I'll close the public testimony. Unless Julie... No? Then I'll close public testimony and bring it back to the room.
Through the chair, I would like to, if I'm not stepping on your toes, sir, thank the sponsor for taking the time and trouble to come down here and make the presentation today. We don't often get for such a housekeeping tract to have the honor.
I'll add my thanks to that, too. But I believe he's going to have a conflict on the floor. You are a CPA, are you, Mike?
He's done his 3 years.
What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chair? I'd like to move, I have to find it again, House Bill 379 with any individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Seeing no opposition, we'll move it out of committee and we'll take a brief at ease. And record, I believe we've got a representative from Representative Harris's office to present House Bill 379. Could you please state your name and official...
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Pete Feldman, staffer representative John Harris. I had forgotten how close the setting is here, so I'll try not to make anybody mad. It might get hurt. I'm here to present House Bill 350, which is a effort by Representative John Harris to help out and support some of the small mom-and-pop tourist operations who are involved in renting recreational vehicles and also renting cars. Really what it amounts to is a tax offset for the 3% of the total tax, so it's a 10% tax, but 3% of that tax, it's an offset to adjust for these individual businesses collecting the tax, doing the paperwork. It also costs them money. Most rental car businesses use credit cards, and that costs them money. There's money involved in using the credit cards. They get charged for that. So it's really an adjustment and an offset to allow for the mom-and-pop tourist operations to keep 3% of the total tax collected. Just as a kind of example on how this would affect the businesses in the state, there's about 110 people that are involved, or I'm sorry, 110 businesses that are involved in paying this tax. If the cap was set at $1,000 a year, that would affect 27 taxpayers. So in other words, 27 of those taxpayers would be affected by the cap. That would mean that 83 of those taxpayers would retain 3% of the tax collected. That kind of gives you an idea on the volume. If it was only a $1,000 a year cap, 83 of those businesses would be able to keep that 3% tax. So it's the bottom end, the small businesses, the people who are really affecting tourism in the state, the people who stay here, spend their money, and help the state out with that. And again, the way it changes is kind of interesting. If the cap was just $2,000 a year, now you're talking 13 taxpayers would be affected, and that would mean that 97 of those businesses would retain 3% of the collected tax. And then if you go ahead and you jump up to a $5,000 cap, that would mean only 8 taxpayers would be affected by the cap, and 102 would retain 3% of the tax. And so what we proposed is, in the original legislation, was that we would have a cap of $1,000 per year for everybody. Now,
a year or a quarter?
There's a blank CS that hasn't been adopted that would change the it from a year.
When did we get the CS? Just this afternoon? Okay, is there amendments to the blank CS coming also?
No.
Okay.
The blank CS actually, Representative Gatto through the chair, takes it to $1,000 per quarter, which would be about, $4,000 a year. Under that scenario, the cap at $1,000 per quarter, then there would be 10 taxpayers that would be affected by the cap, and 100 of them would retain the 3% that it costs them to collect this tax. And that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
Now, Representative Newman, followed by Representative Booth.
I've got a couple, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Mr. Feldman, this is a vehicle rental tax. First, I got to say, I can understand why businesses want to do this, but the vehicle rental tax is 10% of the total fees. There's a lot of other taxes in this state that are paid, and this is a little bit on behalf of Representative Gardner. And in fact, I'm going to let her ask those particular ones. Pass that one down. So I've got plenty of my own questions.
All right, thank you.
But
before we go ahead, I'm going to interrupt. Before we get too far into this, do I hear a motion to adopt the CS that I didn't know we had as the working document?
We do. We have it.
I would be glad to. If I had a copy.
Backslash A, I believe, isn't it? Am I the only one with it? Or C?
C.
C.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're all stuck with A.
No,
I've got C.
Everybody got C?
You?
Yeah.
Did you do that?
I don't have
I have it too. There it is. Never mind.
It's a one pager, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if we could get a copy of it. I don't have C.
Yep. Copy on page.
Brief at ease. So we're waiting on a motion.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move CS for House Bill 350 / C for committee discussion.
Seeing no opposition, that's the version we'll be working off of. Any further questions for the sponsor of the bill at this point in time? Representative Ledoux, followed by Book and Gardner. Ledoux?
Could you give me a list of the taxes in this state that small businesses collect on behalf of? I'm seeing Representative Gardner's showing me something. That the state collects, or that small businesses collect on behalf of the state. I mean, I'm reading from this list that Representative Gardner just very graciously supplied. Bed tax, alcohol tax, tobacco tax, commercial passenger tax, telephone utility tax, fisheries tax, gaming tax, motor fuel tax, tire fees tax. How many of those tax, and there probably are more too, how many of those taxes, is there a rebate such as this?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, we're talking about two sets of taxes, which you're probably aware of. One's an excise tax and one's an income tax. The excise tax is a tax that is collected by an individual for the state.
And that's what I was talking about.
Right. And then, of course, some of those that you quoted are actually have to do with income tax. So that's what it's
okay.
But yes, there's what they call no timely filing credit. And then there is a timely filing credit. And so the one, and a no timely, no timely filing credit is, means that there is no tax relief. So we have the alcohol tax, there's no timely filing credit. The state doesn't have a bed tax, but there's several municipalities that do. There's a commercial passenger vessel tax, there's no timely filing credit for that. There's the cigarette tax, which there is a timely filing credit for that. We address that in the sponsor statement. There's other tobacco products tax. There's a 4% timely filing credit with no cap on that one. There's the motor fuel tax. There's a 1% timely filing credit capped at $100 a month. There's the salmon enhancement tax, which there's no timely filing credit. And there's the fisheries tax, the dive fisheries tax. There's no timely filing credit for that. The regional seafood development tax, which there's no timely filing credit for that. The gaming tax, again, no timely filing. And the tire fee, which is 5% timely filing credit capped at $900 a quarter.
So, why should we just single out this particular tax? Why don't we just either have a no timely filing credit for everything and give nobody credit? Or why don't we just, you know, I guess Christmas tree the thing to death and just have timely filing credit, basically the same thing for everything? How did this particular thing
through the chair, Representative Ledoux? Some of these timely filing credits have to do with the expense. Like with the cigarette tax, there's an expense. They have to buy an expensive stamping machine, and they stamp them, and they have to keep tracking it. You know, it has to do with the amount of paperwork involved. It has to do with, in this case, with rental cars. Most people are required through the companies that they work for to use credit cards. Well, there's an obvious expense to having to use credit cards. And so when the people collect the tax, they have these incurred expenses, which they can't help. And so rental cars is one of those where they have this incurred expense, which they just can't help. And so that's why we felt like a 3% tax relief would help cover those costs and the paperwork when people use credit cards and so on.
But follow up. But are you suggesting that for these other things, people don't use credit cards? I thought since we're all indentured to Alaska Airlines for our miles, that everybody uses credit cards.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I'm not suggesting that they wouldn't use credit cards, but their options are there that they may be able to use cash or write a check and so on, which then that's immediate bank processing. But in the case with rental cars, you know, most of them have to use a credit card.
Thank you.
Representative Gardner, followed by Representative Buchengatto.
Thank you. Do you know what the tax percent rate is on the tobacco taxes and the motor fuel taxes? Yeah. And the reason I ask that is because you've listed here that motor fuel taxes, for example, 1% of the total amount can be deducted and retained. I'm just sort of curious to know what the tax rate is, that 1% of 3%, 1% of...
I'm sorry, Representative Gardner, I don't know that. I can find it out for you. I know that the tobacco products tax is 0.4% for timely credit with no cap. I know that one.
I'm sorry, the motor...
The tire fee is 5% timely filing credit with a $900 cap.
Okay.
And let's see... The cigarettes is a graduated amount from 3% to 1% is capped at $50,000 a year, which tells you a little bit about how much they tax cigarettes.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chair, just in follow-up, I'd like to say that you say here as a matter of equity, Alaskan businesses collecting their vehicle rental tax deserve similar compensation. You could make the case you're saying similar compensation to 1% of the total tax due with a maximum of 100, which is the example just up above. So, I mean, I say that somewhat jokingly, but I guess I'm with Representative Ledoux if we're going to say the state will compensate for credit card sales, the discount that the merchants pay, why single out just the one? Because I'd submit that motor fuel taxes are largely paid through credit cards as well, and they may have a lower discount with credit card companies, but who knows?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner. And again, I think there's more options when you go to fuel up as far as being able to, you know, take $10 or, you know, write a check or so on versus, you know, being basically required to use a credit card.
Representative Buch,
do you have a follow-up on that?
I actually do. It's Representative Gardner's question, so I guess she gets to decide.
I'll be heard follow up on a new question for you when we get down to
okay,
you.
Okay, thank you. And thank you, Representative Ledoux and Mr. Chair. I guess I would say if the state wants to institute any kind of taxes and bills like this are in effect, then what we would need to do is increase whatever we want to collect by 3% and then let the merchant do that. And I would also posit that the actual cost to the merchant of processing, collecting and processing the tax really is relatively minimal, that they get systems set up. But thank you.
Representative Buch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Legislative Aide Feldman. I know you came down here thinking that this was going to be pretty straightforward. This committee is very inquisitive and in following those same kinds of lines of thought. Do you know that when, for example, we go and pay for licenses, hunting license, fishing license, so forth, that I believe there's a 3% that is held over by those retailers or whoever, and to cover their overhead, things like the king salmon stamp, the state duck stamp, all of those kinds of things, they create a certain, you know, caretaking for records and so forth. Would this be considered an excise tax? Would this be considered a fee, an income tax? What kind of category would this be in? Because basically to the retailer, it's all overhead, and somebody has to account for that.
Through the chair, Representative Buch, I think that it's an excise tax because we have the dealer who is signed up with the state to process fishing license, You know, he is collecting a tax for the state. And I, unfortunately, I missed that one when I was doing my research to find out what they paid. And I can get back to you with that if you'd like.
Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pete, as part, I've rented cars at the Anchorage Airport and was astounded at the list of taxes. Is this one, the facility, the parking facility tax, the airport tax, the Anchorage municipality tax, and I believe then a state tax?
To the chair, Representative Gatto, I believe those are all included in the 10% tax.
And this gets to the question. A lot of those do not go to the state. They go to other organizations. And if we were to take just the lump sum of taxes, we would be giving credit for taxes we don't receive.
Through the chair, very good point, Representative Gatto.
Representative Ledoux.
I don't understand this distinction between businesses that have to take credit cards and those that there's a choice of taking credit cards. In the first place, correct me if I'm wrong, we don't have a law on the books that says the car rental company has to take a credit card, do we?
Not to my knowledge.
So then they really don't have to take the credit card.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, that's, I think, a company policy with the rental car companies that they use credit cards. I don't think you can go, I have never been able to go and rent a car with a check, with a personal check. But it has always required me to use a credit card.
Follow up? Are you sure you're actually required to use the credit card for the actual payment, or when you come in to rent the car, you put down your credit card like you do for a hotel room? For example, I mean, when you check into a hotel these days, they want your credit card. But then when you actually go to pay for it, if I'm not mistaken, I think you could probably use other forms of payment like checks or cash or something like that, couldn't you?
Through the chair, my experience has been that they want you to have a credit card on file, and that when you return the car or the car is returned, then they charge your credit card. Whether or not you could give them a check and have them hold a check and then have them keep your credit card number on hand until, you know, it sounds cumbersome to me. I just know that they, within a rental car business, that it's very common to request and I want to say require, which may be wrong, but a credit card, at least a credit card number.
Actually, I think I can clarify that. We have a number of people online that are from car rental agencies, but to the best of my knowledge, you only have to have their credit card. You can pay it off any way you want once you bring the car back.
Okay.
But we can ask that question when we get down to the the public testimony. But I would venture to guess that you're correct. You can pay it off in cash or anything else as long as you have a card to that they can use as a deposit. Any further questions for Pete? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Feldman, you've had some pretty good information there. Did we all get copies of that?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, this is a personal format. I can make copies for it, but this is in a format that you want. I could do better and lay it out for you in a more organized fashion.
If I may, Mr. Chair, I'd appreciate that. And then maybe a little explanation about you know, you said there's no timely filing credit and there's timely filing credits and what that means.
Okay.
And I think Representative Gatto brought up a pretty good question there, because I know some of this does go for the carport or the garage in Anchorage and things like that. And I mean, if this is all just a structure for that, how does that differ from other taxes that are common, whether they're timely filing credits or no timely filing credit type taxes, you know, or like taxes that are falling into that same category? Because I think these are going just to repay back bonds that a lot of times are for the benefit of some of the car rental agencies.
Yep. Let's just see.
So if you could get that for us next time around, I'd appreciate it.
Through the chair, I will work on that, Representative Newman. I thought maybe I had a copy of a breakdown. I read that someplace. And let's see. I'll have to get back to the committee with that, Representative Newman.
Also, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Feldman. Did these all just kind of add up? Was this to 10% a little at a time, you know, or did this, you know, is there 2% added and then another tax on, for like a car garage in Anchorage that added another 4 cents and to get to this 10% or a certain percentage? Or was it all at one whack? Because I'm trying to think in my mind, or if you researched this and went back to the original discussion on how we got it, 10%, was there just a 10% tax put on vehicle rentals? How did we get to where we're at without realizing that this does cost businesses throughout the state of Alaska? And the reason I ask that is, again, you know, I'm kind of under the thought process here going through my mind that, you know, I don't like to see companies having to pay the burden for the state without being duly compensated, and maybe we need to look at this at other types of similar taxes and how we got to where we're at.
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I'll definitely find out. I don't know if it was just a 10% charge thrown on or if this has been a history of legislation that has taken place, but I can definitely find out.
Good information. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
What was the source of this legislation? Is this modeled after other states, or is this?
Mr. Chairman, no. We just are always in contact with lots of individuals in the tourist industry, and this was brought to Speaker Harris's attention during the summer when he was working. That, you know, here's something that seemed unfair. Of course, it was from the perspective of the people in that part of the industry, and so that's, we thought that in order to help tourism, because, you know, their budget has been in question recently, and you know, there's always that need to help these small industries, we thought we'd try to make an adjustment for them.
Are there other states that are issuing credits similar to this?
Not that I know of.
So we're on the cutting edge.
I don't know that either, Mr. Chairman, but that's another one of those questions that I appreciate, and I'll try to find out.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Feldman, when communities collect an income tax, a municipality like Wasilla, does the businesses collecting that tax, do they receive any type of payback, or do they get a credit for that work involved in that?
That I don't know, but I believe online that we have Joanne Bales online. She's with DOR, and she would probably be better at answering that question.
We do have Joanna Bales online. Joanna, are you with us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm here.
Do you want to take a shot at that question?
Sure. For the record, my name is Joanna Bales. I'm the Deputy Director of the Tax Division. I'm not aware as to whether or not other municipalities give the timely filing credit. Other states do for these types of taxes, where you basically put a business into a fiduciary responsibility for the state, where they have to collect tax from a third party and then remit it to the state. So it's not an uncommon practice. And just to, I mean, I can actually answer quite a few of the questions that have been brought up. The vehicle rental tax was effective on January 1st of 2004. During the same legislative session, the tire fee was enacted. It became effective actually in September of 2003, but both of those bills passed during the same legislative session. And for the tire fee, there was what we call here at the division a timely filing credit, where you do compensate these businesses for being in this fiduciary responsibility for the state. We actually here at the department were a little confused that timely filing credit wasn't given to the vehicle rental car companies at that time. So because there is a trend now to move towards giving the timely filing credit. I mean, I know we went through, say, the alcohol tax and some of these other taxes where we don't provide that credit. Well, those tax types have been around for quite some time, and I think the timely filing credit is something that came up particularly with the tobacco tax, but because there is a lot of activity that's required in order to stamp cigarettes and things like that. So that's just a little bit of a history of the timely filing credit. I don't know if other municipalities actually do that, but if you look at some of the municipalities, they do use the state law to craft their laws. So I think, in fact, in Anchorage, they do give a timely filing credit for their cigarette tax because they crafted it after Alaska's law.
Actually, Ms. Bales, this is Kurt Olson, and I believe the Kenai Peninsula Borough gives it on sales tax, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Any other questions for Joanna? Representative Gatto.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. Joanna, there's a distinction to me, at least, that says if you're selling tires, you might be selling them four at a time, and you're collecting, is it $2.50 called the state fee?
Representative Gatto, through the chair, that's correct, $2.50 per tire.
And I want to compare that to the state fuel tax. Is it 8 cents, I believe, a gallon?
8 cents a gallon, yes.
And in one case, it seems like you have to make hand entries onto a bill of sale that lists the state tax. In the other case, it is done by computer without a doubt, and there would be relatively no difficulty in figuring out the total amount of the fuel tax that you collected, and you're really not concerned about warranties or anything on the fuel tax. While on the selling tires, you get somewhat involved in the customer's needs, looking up things for him and whatnot. And so the tire tax, to me, should be considered differently than we would consider the fuel tax and then taxes in between. Now let me get to the car tax. That also, I believe, is simply computer generated. There isn't a whole lot of involvement from the counter person who says, do you want a Malibu or do you want a Explorer or do you want two-wheel drive? Those things really don't matter very much because the computer generates the tax. Am I correct?
Representative Gatto, through the chair, part of your statements are correct, and part of it, I mean, I see where you're going, but basically what these timely filing credits are set up to do is to compensate businesses for filling out the state paperwork and keeping information about the specific tax. I mean, for example, if you rent a car and you're a state worker, you're exempt from the vehicle rental tax. That company has to keep paperwork that you filled out as a renter to say, I'm a state worker, I'm on state business. So there is more record keeping than just simply putting information into the system. I mean, the system is something that comes about not because of the tax, but because you're renting cars. So I don't really see too much difference between the tire fee versus the vehicle rental tax, or even the motor fuel tax for that matter, because the timely filing credit, like I said, is geared towards you have to complete additional paperwork by virtue of the fact that there is a tax and you are required to collect and account for it. And in the motor fuel tax, there is a timely filing credit that's provided. I think probably if you want to, look at differences, for instance, let's take the alcohol tax. We have 29 taxpayers. The majority of those taxpayers, well, at least we have probably 6 to 10 taxpayers who pay, I would say, 90% of the tax. Those are large distributors, very sophisticated entities, versus, say, the tire fee and even the vehicle rental tax, where you're talking 100 to 200 taxpayers, most of which are unsophisticated, and this is additional work for them. Have I answered your question?
Follow-up.
Almost. I rented cars. I believe I'm a state employee. I've rented cars in Anchorage, and I saw the whole list of taxes and paid them. So sometimes we get a forgiveness, sometimes we don't. But I wanted to take a look. We got something from Great Alaskan Holidays, and it mentions tire dealers that collect the tire fees to keep 5% up to $900 a quarter as a reward for remitting fees in a timely manner. 5%. On the same page, it refers to MasterCard as 1.85%. It seems like under, and I don't know what the cigarette timely credits would be, but it seems like depending on the commodity, we have different numbers as far as the amount that we would feel that the collector is entitled to retain. Why would there be a difference between different categories?
Yeah, Representative Gatto, through the chair, I mean, that is an anomaly. It is probably something where someone needs to look at all of these taxes and make a determination as to what makes sense to remunerate these companies for what they're doing on behalf of the state. And one of the other things I'd like to just quickly address is that you made mention about all the different fees that are charged when you rent a car, that I think there's a 4% facility fee at the airport. This particular timely filing credit is only for the state excise tax, which is 10%. All the other fees that you see when you rent a car, this doesn't apply to. And you are correct, that money doesn't go to the state, but this credit would not go against those fees that are paid. This is just strictly the vehicle rental tax, which is 10% for passenger cars and 3% for recreational vehicles.
Well, thank you. And I'm going to continue just a little bit because I'm just reading the CS for the bill. And the title, an act providing for an amount to be deducted and retained for collecting and submitting the vehicle rental tax. It didn't use the word state of Alaska portion of the vehicle rental tax. Later on line 5, a person required to collect and pay the tax, not the state of Alaska tax. So when I brought that up, it was with consideration that do we need to clarify in legislation before somebody decides to challenge it that this has to be, we have to write it down that it has to be only the state of Alaska portion of any tax.
Representative Gatto, through the chair, the language says a person required to collect and pay the tax to the department under A of this section, and A is the section that specifically identifies the state of Alaska vehicle rental tax.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I don't know if this is for Ms. Beal or the sponsor, but the kind of question I had earlier, it says, like on line 5, a person. Now, would that might be better off to say the business collecting the tax, or I mean, if you have a person who's writing out the receipt, there might be a questionnaire. Well, I'm the person who collected this, or I'm the person who wrote it out. Just maybe a little clarification there.
Representative Newman, I can run that past legal to see if that's a concern. I think it's a person required to collect the tax, and so that's inferring to a person who owns the business, who's running the business. So, but it's some question, right? I think it falls on the responsibility of the person required is the business owner.
Any further questions for Ms. Bales? Thanks again, Joanna.
Thank you.
One more question, Representative Newman.
Ms. Bales, Representative Gatto asked, you said it was somewhat of an anomaly that where we're having different taxes or how much can be paid back or allowed to be kept by a company or a person collecting the tax. Could you look at the different taxes collected and see what the rates are for those and kind of get back to us on that, or at least to the sponsors so we know what those are, because I'm interested in that.
Yeah, certainly, Representative Newman. I'd be happy to do that. It's probably something that whose time has come.
Well, yeah. I think so, too, Mr. Chair, just in the fact that if we're going to do this for one, and I don't have a problem doing this, but we should treat them all equally. And if businesses, if this is costing them, it's, maybe we can help some more people on this besides just these people.
Any further questions for Ms. Bales?
I do.
Any further questions for Pete at this time? Or
No, just for Ms. Bales. Ms. Bales, this is Representative Gatto again. I'm going back to under A of this section. And when I went to A, 4350.050, of course, they do what everything does, and they refer you back to 4352.010. And I went back to 010, and it says levy of passenger vehicle rental tax. There is imposed an excise tax. Does that word excise mean a state tax only and no other tax?
Representative Gatto, through the chair, the term excise tax, no. I mean, there are lots of excise taxes if a municipality had an excise tax. But the way the statutes are written and set up is that it does only deal specifically with the state's rental car tax and no other taxes.
Follow? Representative Liddell? Representative Newman? Thanks again, Joanna.
All right, thank you.
With that, I'm going to go to the Anchorage LIO, and because of the number of people that we have signed up, we're going to limit the testimony to 3 minutes. And Gary Zimmerman, you're the first up. Could you please state your name and affiliation for the record?
Thank you, Chair Olson and members of the committee. My name is Gary Zimmerman. I'm the general manager of Avis Rent-A-Car. We have locations throughout Alaska. We're Alaska-owned and operated, and we employ over 100 year-round employees. Many of them are employee owners of the company. I personally testified in Juneau several years ago in front of the Senate Finance Committee explaining to the bill's sponsor and the committee of the financial hardship that imposing this tax would have on the individual rental vehicle companies. I'm here not to weigh in on the pitfalls of the 10% vehicle rental tax and its negative impact on our industry. I'm here to ask for your support of Representative Harris's bill providing for a reimbursement of our accounting administrative costs, something that I testified about in front of the Senate Committee many years ago. Very simply, becoming a tax collector for the state of Alaska costs Avis money. We have absolute direct costs and indirect costs associated with the ongoing enforcement, collections, and remittance of this tax. Our direct costs include our businesses overwhelmingly conducted on credit card transactions. For every dollar we collect via a credit card, we are charged a discount percentage that ranges from 2 to 3%. Avis collected over $1.2 million in tax revenue from our customers this last year at a direct cost to us of around $25,000 simply with those credit card fees. Very simple economics shows you that this tax costs us hard dollars. We are not in favor of the $1,000 cap. Indirect costs, we incur ongoing accounting functions, including upgrading computer equipment, handling and processing payments, and counter-agent training. As trivial as it sounds, we spend many hours training employees and then trying to explain to customers that no, they are not tax exempt, and to compound issues, the 8% Anchorage car rental tax treats exemptions differently than the state, adding confusion to customers and young rental agents trying to provide great customer service. Other taxing authorities in Alaska provide for similar timely filing credit. Private entities when collecting taxes. The city of Kenai and the city of Skagway both reimburse us 5% of the tax we collect. Collecting this tax for the state of Alaska costs us considerable money. We would ask that you please realize the burden levied against us and consider legislation that lessens that burden. In closing, I'd like to thank Representative Harris for this legislation and for the committee members that are reviewing this. Should you have any questions, I'd be willing to assist in answering them.
Representative Gatto, followed by Representative Liddell.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. You mentioned Visa or MasterCard charges 2 to 3%.
That's a broad range.
Hold on, let me finish here.
Sorry.
I'm guessing that couldn't be an accurate number. I don't think Visa or MasterCard says, what the heck, 2 to 3%, you know, tell me what's right. My guess is it's a solid number out to two decimal places. Am I correct?
Yes, you are.
And do you know what that number is?
No, I do not.
We have something from Great Alaskan Holidays indicating they're paying 1.85%.
Okay.
That sound reasonable?
Sure.
Okay.
It'll vary by transaction and by credit card company.
And then a second question. When you have additional costs, such as collecting the tax, and every single competitor of yours has the same additional cost to collect their tax, do you not simply adjust your rates to reflect the cost so you can make a reasonable profit?
Yeah, when we try to adjust our rates upward, I mean, it's a competitive marketplace, and I'll grant you that answer. But it is competitive, and if we raise our rates to adjust, we're also collecting additional fees for taxes. And we just have to incur the cost. If we raise our price a dollar, we're going to pay a buck to the state or a 10 cents to the state of Alaska, and we have to pay a fee on that 10 cents.
Representative Ledoux?
I was just wondering when you come in paying by credit card to reserve the car, and then you take the car back, does the person who's renting the car have the choice of paying that then through the credit card or through cash or through a check?
I can't speak for the other companies. The policy at Avis Rent-A-Car is you have to have a credit card up front unless you have prearranged billing arrangements with us. But we do allow the customer to pay cash or traveler's checks or other methods of payment upon return, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Zimmerman. Jim Palefka, are you with us, Jim?
Yes, thank you.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you for waiting us out on this one.
My pleasure. My name is Jim Palefka, and I'm general manager for National Alamo Car Rental here in Anchorage. First of all, we're very much in agreement with Mr. Zimmerman's statement, and it does cost our company as well to collect the state tax. We have nearly collected around $900,000 in state tax in 2007, and it definitely costs us in credit card fees to process that amount of revenue. We venture to guess, again, between 2 and 3%. I do not have the exact percentage with me. This does not include any types of yearly audits, should there be any, or any labor expenses with regard to the processing or retention. And we would ask that you would work with us and allow this bill to pass with no cap, which would allow us to maintain the 3% for us to assist us with these different expenses. We should not be treated any differently due to our size, as we all are in the same business of renting vehicles. And that's my testimony.
Any questions for Representative Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Palefko. Now, I noticed that there's quite a few rental car agencies that are testifying on this, but when we passed the, I guess it was, I don't know, bonding authority to be paid back by vehicle rental taxes on the parking garage at Anchorage International, Ted Stevens International Airport, that was primarily as a major benefit to the rental car companies so that their vehicles would be stored inside so that they could fuel them on site, so they could wash them on site. Is this 10% vehicle rental tax, is it the same in other communities outside Anchorage? Do you still pay a 10% tax? I guess what I'm getting at is, as part of this, you know, for the Anchorage, the new parking garage in Anchorage that was, I mean, presented to Transportation Committee that I served on is a major benefit to the car rental companies. Is this 10% statewide, or is it less than other areas of the state?
I can't speak on behalf of other states or other cities within the state. All I'm speaking about is the what's before us right now, which is the 10% state tax that is imposed upon us here in Anchorage or throughout the state of Alaska. It's a sole topic on its own, standalone excise tax that's before us at this time.
Well, I guess if I may, if it's a full 10% excise tax, because I know part of that was to go pay for the parking garage in Anchorage. So
has nothing to do with the parking garage at all.
Okay, so there's an additional tax on top of that for the parking garage?
There's an additional CFC that is being charged on a per-day basis for every transaction day by all the car rental companies at the Anchorage International Airport to pay for the facility.
That's what I was getting at. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Uh-huh.
Thank you very much. Craig Floyd, are you with us, Craig?
Yes, I am.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Craig Floyd, and my brother and I own the Thrifty Car Rental franchise and the Dollar Car Rental franchise. We've owned the Thrifty Car Rental franchise for 30 years, so we are kind of the small guy. We've started off a little trailer house and have grown the business to where we are today. So we've got, we're inside the airport and have grown considerably over the years. The additional taxes cause an increased burden on the business, and we need some tax relief. Our costs for accepting major credit cards, we talked about discounts. It averages about 2.63%. The discount varies more on American Express versus if you take a Visa or Discover card. So it kind of varies from card to card, which we do take all those cards. My accounting department tells me we spend about 7.5 hours a week with administering the taxes and keeping track of the taxes, which is about $9,000 a year. And then with the discount we pay, it's costing our company about over $29,000 a year. So I ask that you support this bill without the $1,000 cap, because, you know, if it costs us $29,000, we're talking $1,000, it's really just a drop in the bucket. So I also agree with what Gary and Jim have said, and I ask that you support the bill. And that's the end of my testimony.
Any questions for Mr. Floyd? Thanks again. Daryl Bennett, are you with us, Daryl?
Yes, I am.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you for your written testimony also.
Oh, you're welcome. My name is Daryl Bennett, and I am the owner of Great Alaskan Holidays. We're finally around to the ma and pa business here. We started this business with four motorhomes 23 years ago and have grown it to the largest motorhome rental company in Alaska. Last year, employed 30 people on a year-round basis and went up to about 75 employees at our peak during the season. As we have grown the business, every dollar has meant something to us. And we have collected in the last 4 years on behalf of the state of Alaska in excess of $500,000 in taxes. Now, the discount fee that we pay for a credit card, what I put in the letter that I wrote, is the very lowest number, and that's 1.85%. That is for a MasterCard, for example, that has no rewards associated with it. So when you add a mileage card or a signature card, all of those do have different numbers that are broken out every month on my bill from my bank that tell me how much I charged for Visa rewards cards, for example, and how much money it was and how many charges there were. Those amounts do go up to about 2.3%. Now, these are all numbers that we all individually have negotiated with our bank, so there's no consistency of what I pay and anybody else in this room pays. But in addition to this, we have our own accounting department, which is the guy seated next to me, and one other person that works for us. And to enter these into our accounting program took about 18,000 accounting entries over the last 4 years. And that's quite a bit of an effort. And, you know, we would just like to have our costs of collecting this money on behalf of the state of Alaska paid to us rather than us having to pay to collect the money for the state. And, it's just a heck of a lot of money to us. And if we cap this at $1,000, well, first of all, in January, February, and March, I have no rentals. And in October, November, December, I have no rentals. So I won't get any cap those two quarters. And so it would end up be $2,000. You know, that's out of the more than $12,000 that I've spent in hard money. It's just a drop in the bucket, as the gentleman said from Thrifty. That's the end of my testimony. Chairman Olson, I appreciate your time and your consideration to everyone on this bill.
Well, thank you also. Leon McClain, are you with us?
Yes, sir, I am. Thank you. I'd like to thank the committee and appreciate your time. My name is Leon McKean, and I'm the general manager for Great Alaskan Holidays, and I've worked for Mr. Bennett for 10 years now. I'm in support of this bill with no cap. When the original tax was put into place, one of the issues for us is that really this was an opportunity to find revenue out from non-constituents, travelers to Alaska. And the only issue that we would have is that at this point it's actually taxing our business, because we're underwriting the cost of administration of this. It's not something that we would think is appropriate, and it's something we've asked that in this bill would attend to that problem. I am in support of what Mr. Bennett said, and I would defer to any other comments he might have. He could use my time to comment on this.
The original.
And he's indicating he said what he needs to say. I sure appreciate your time. I would entertain any questions if you have any.
Any questions? Well, thank you again for participating. Lynn Zeller, are you with us?
Yes, I am. My name is Lynn Zeller. I'm a representative of Budget Rent-A-Car. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
I would also like to support, have all of you support this bill, because I do represent a rental car company here in Anchorage and throughout the state. And I do like to just reiterate the cost associated to the credit cards. We do, at Budget Rent-A-Car, require a major credit card for establishing a deposit and a payment at the end of the rental. So there is cost associated with that on a day-to-day basis. We also have the staff that are trained to obtain this information from the customers. Those customers are renters coming from all over the world. So it is very important that we do have some form of support from the legislatures on this bill. And we also have an accounting person as well that has to oversee all the audits and the reports. So when she pays the state of Alaska on these taxes, and we are in compliance. So I, as a representative of budget, hope that you pass this bill with flying colors. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Wayne Martin.
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you for still being here. Please identify yourself and your affiliation for the record.
Yes, my name is Wayne Martin, and I work for ABC Motorhomes. We've been in business here in Alaska for over 20 years. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on this issue. I'm in great support of House Bill number 350, introduced by Mr. Harris, that will provide an adjustment on the rental tax burden implemented in 2004. Please consider moving this important measure forward. I would also like to see you consider not putting any cap on this credit. I think its intent was to ease some of the burden, no matter how much some of us in this industry bear. We really don't mind collecting the rental tax and submitting these funds to the state. However, please consider this small rebate, which will certainly help us in these efforts. It really is more than just a simple computer function. I don't know how many of you folks have had the state auditors knock on your door, but it really is helpful for all of us to be prepared and have all our paperwork in order. And so again, it's, you know, we've talked a lot about the credit card issue, but it really is a lot more than that. to keep track of everything. And again, we don't mind, but we certainly would appreciate some consideration in helping the state collect these taxes. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. John Cook, calling in from
Yes.
Someplace other than the Anchorage LIO.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for the record, my name is John Cook. I'm legislative director of the Alaska Auto Dealers Association, and I'm calling from Fairbanks. And many of the speakers, I guess, have testified as to the some of the costs that are out there. I guess just with regard to our industry, we are also in support of this, in support of HB 350 without any cap. You know, when this tax was instituted back in 2004, car dealers were actually put in a situation of not only having to install costly, you know, modifications to our software for what's a relatively small portion of the business, but we were actually also required to pay tax for customers that had vehicles in for warranty, recall, or service contract repairs. So we, for vehicles that you would take for from our shops for free, we'd actually have to pay the tax because we were being reimbursed by the factory and weren't allowed to recoup those dollars. Fortunately, that little loophole, or I guess problem for us, was fixed last year by the legislature. However, we're still in a position where for things like customer rentals, or if a portion of a service you know, visit is warranty and a portion is customer pay, we're still required to, you know, collect that tax. And I, again, I think the credit card fees are part of it, but as a previous speakers have testified to, the modifications that we have to make to our rental car software programs, or just manually calculating these entries, are very time consuming and burdensome. I know in the instance of people, businesses that collect money for fish and game licenses, for example, they're allowed to get 7.5% of the funds, I believe is the number, that they're allowed to retain from the tax that they collect. So I guess our industry, you know, the rental industry, and in particular the dealerships, would just like to be put on a level playing field with other entities that are allowed to get early filing fees and you know, just help us out with some of these truly, you know, large and hard costs. And thank you, and I'm available for questions if you have any.
Representative Gatto.
Thank you. Doesn't the software that you own that deals with keeping track of all the things you do on vehicle rentals come with a line item that says sales tax or something that was already there where you simply entered a zero?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, typically most of the dealership packages are not necessarily designed for rental vehicles. So, you know, again, those are modifications that we have to pay for. And then again, too, we get into situations where we have a rental out of the service department, and the majority of our rentals out of dealerships are to customers of the service department. You know, what happens when we get a situation like I just described where part of the rental is covered by warranty and part is not? You know, the system sees it as revenue in its entirety, even though a portion of it is exempted by state statute. So it requires, you know, some cumbersome, you know, reconciliations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else online that would care to testify at this point in time? Seeing none, is there anyone in the room that hasn't had a chance to testify? I'm going to be holding the bill over. I think we've...
I have a question for Pete.
Sure.
Mr. Feldman, we heard a lot of testimony here upwards of, I just wrote down one number, that cost one of these companies $29,000 a year to administer these taxes. Every one of them said that they support the bill without a cap. But with just with the $1,000 cap, fiscal note is $255,000. At $1,000 per quarter, am I reading that right? Or
through the chair.
That would be a cost to the state. It just would be money that the state doesn't get.
If there was no cap, it was calculated there'd be $255,000 a year that the state would lose in revenue if there was no cap.
If there was no cap.
Right.
And how does a company, so if there's no cap, how does the state come up with an amount on, I don't know, I mean, these companies are collecting this tax, and this people testified that it says it cost them $29,000 a year, one company, another company said more than that, some, I don't know, where they were kind of bouncing pretty high numbers out there. How does the state regulate that? Do they just take it for what this company says it costs them, or what?
To the chair, Representative Newman, I think we're going to have to get a consensus among, you know, the business entities and come up with a number that's fair to everybody, and maybe take a look at the drafting and see if we need to make some changes.
Well, the state would probably have a pretty good handle on it because they're reporting the 10% right now. So I think they have, it'd be pretty easy to figure out what the gross rentals are from that standpoint. So they can pin it down once we know what variables to plug in. But
company.
Yeah.
And then just one more comment. You know, there was also a comment of like there's a 7.5% for a fish license. That's $25. And you're still collecting the tax and doing the paperwork and taking care of people's money on the counter, where generally a rental tax on a vehicle is several hundred, if not thousands of dollars. So 3%, you know, on that amount of money as compared to 7.5% on 10 bucks, you know, is,
it's all relative.
That's a fair comparison there.
All right.
Any further questions for Pete? Representative Ledoux?
I guess I just want to see whether I'm looking at this correct mathematically. If the cost of the rental is $100, and then the 10% tax on that, that's $10. Is it 3% of $100 or 3% of
$10? 3% of $10.
Okay, so it would only be like 30 cents.
We're going to be holding this over. I think there's some minor adjusting that needs to be done, and I certainly, for one, will be weighing in with the sponsor, and I think we've got something we can work with. It just needs some fine tuning. With that, we'll adjourn at 4:38.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.